The following conversation is with Raymond Hanslick, H-A-N-Z-L-I-K. He is on the staff of Robert Finch. His office is on the second floor of the West Wing. Today is November 16th, 1972. Terry Good will conduct the interview. Well, so far as when you actually came on board, do you have an approximate date?
I started on October 1st of 1971, and I was for approximately 2 months on Mr. Finch's staff as a consultant primarily for youth affairs. And the circumstances of that were that he was given the responsibility for monitoring the follow-up program for the White House Youth Conference. Now, the Youth Conference was over in the spring of 71, and out of the conference grew a year-long program of follow-up activities. And one of the projects of that was a White House review of the conference results. He was given the task of coordinating that activity. I came over from the Youth Conference staff to his office to be his coordinator. And so for the first 2 months, I worked in that capacity. I also, during that time, began working with the president's youth staff youth assistant, the staff assistant who was responsible for youth affairs. And so I really spent as much time on presidential youth matters as I did on the conference, but that was sort of my initial activities. Then in late November of last year, Mr. Finch's top assistant left to return to the University of Michigan, where he's a professor, George Grassmutter. And his successor, who had been on board for about 6 months preparing to move into that job, a fellow named Dr. Glenn Wagner, who was a White House fellow at HEW and had come over here to the Finch staff, suddenly and somewhat unexpectedly resigned to run for the Senate in Idaho. So Mr. Finch was left without an executive assistant, and I was interviewed among other people and was given the job. So my rough timetable is on the 1st of December or thereabouts, I began working in my present capacity where I've been ever since.
Your title is executive?
Executive assistant. Uh-huh. Now I'm also I've never used this title, but I'm also categorized as a staff assistant to the president. But
I think in most instances we find people have two titles. Mm-hmm. One, a title related to the president.
To show you how you fit in the White House hierarchy. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Your last day here will be Friday or sometime next month?
I'll be here in my current capacity as long as he is,
okay,
which will probably be up to the inauguration. And I'm expecting to stay on in some new capacity, but of course none of us know about that yet.
Could you give me, let's say, a general idea of what an executive assistant to Mr. Finch does?
Well, each one of us who had the job have done it differently. My particular use of the job is as follows. We have a staff, he has a staff of about 12 people. He has a number of responsibilities and functions which he performs for the president. I do several things for him in this capacity. One is I'm his chief administrative assistant. In other words, I handle all of his political and substantive correspondence and paperwork. This is everything from presidential projects to what we call casework, and I'll speak about casework in a second. I'm really his day-to-day coordinator for his various areas of responsibility. For example, he is the president's liaison with the Spanish-speaking community, and in particular the Cabinet Committee on Opportunities for Spanish-speaking. he gave me the task of handling the day-to-day liaison with that committee. So I am the chairman's contact, Chairman Ramirez, and so I deal with him on a day-to-day basis. And I was delegated the responsibility of making sort of routine policy decisions, but whenever it came to a rather major decision, then I would confer with Mr. Finch and we would jointly make a decision. Same thing was true with the National Center for Voluntary Action. The same is true in his work with the Cable Cabinet Committee on Cable Television. Same was true with his efforts with the Peruvian earthquake disaster effort and the Pakistani disaster effort. And there have been some minor projects, which this has likewise been true. He has also been the overall policy person for women, youth, minorities. He could also put California in that category. He is sort of the California man. Now, I mentioned before casework. Because he is the former Lieutenant Governor of California and because he anticipates going back there and running for elected statewide office, he has had a continuing interest in the state. Furthermore, with the two senators from California being Democrats, he has been sort of a third California senator. And many Californians who are Republicans or who are not particularly close to either Senators Cranston or Tunney have turned to him with their problems. And so we have an enormous load of what we call casework, which runs everything from an individual citizen who has a problem with the federal bureaucracy in some way or to some large corporate or governmental organization that needs federal assistance or attention. And I would say that casework has consumed a good 50% of my time. And this involves everything from meeting with representatives of the various cases, if you will, to researching their problems, to meeting with agency and department officials, and frequently other White House individuals. Let me see if I can say anything else about this job. As I mentioned, I'm sort of the chief staff officer. I run his staff, which is 12 people. Everything from office management to salary increases and leave and all that business. I also have become, I wasn't at first, but I have become sort of a political advisor to him. He's, as I've learned more about the White House and his interests and his point of view, I have been involved more in sort of his political discussions and deliberations. And on a number of occasions I've traveled with him, particularly in the campaign, 1972 campaign, and sort of his political assistant in those times. So. It's really an executive assistant, as I have lived it, is pretty much his man Friday. And one of the most exciting aspects about it from my own standpoint is because he's been on the road so much this past year during the campaign is that I have had the opportunity to sit in for him at various meetings and functions and so forth. And so I have been at some rather high level sessions. I represented him at the morning staff meeting, which
the 7:30
meeting, and we'll come back and report to him. I never have represented him at the senior staff meeting, the 8:15 meeting with Haldeman and Ehrlichman and Kissinger and so forth. I've gone to presidential briefings in his place and sometimes with him. So he has been remarkably helpful in including me in everything he possibly can. And so I've really had a chance to sort of play the game of a counselor without being a counselor, of sort of being a sidekick.
How would you describe your relationship administratively with Bonnie Bradbeer, Frank Gannon and Warren Hendricks. These are the names I know.
These are all people on our staff. Well, our staff, there's a very unique factor about this staff, which I've never had any experience before, either in government or in the private sector, and that is Mr. Finch, by his personality and his style, does not like a rigid organization where you have a clear pecking order and a pyramid type of a setup. He likes to deal with individuals directly. He's not the kind that works through me for everything. So it's in a sense a controlled but freewheeling staff organization. But yet we know each other so well, and we all, the fortunate part about it is we all get along so well. We think alike. He's been very careful to pick a staff that is very compatible in terms of personality and style. It's a team or it's a family that simply senses and knows what the other person is doing. And so it doesn't require the kind of supervision and guidance that some staffs do. Now, I am still, at least technically, the top person in the staff, and these people you just mentioned, in a sense, work for me or report to me, although, in fact, this does not always operate this way, because, for example, you take Warren Hendricks, who really is his advanced man, his logistics and arrangements staff person. I just don't get into his area of responsibility at all. I just don't have time for it. He's so competent and experienced that I leave that all to him, and he deals directly with Finch when it comes to that kind of thing. However, I do inject myself whenever I see a problem. I do keep abreast of what he's doing, and I do help Mr. Finch decide, in some cases, of where he should go and what he should do. So I'm sort of a benevolent supervisor, same way with Bonnie Bradbeer. She has been with Mr. Finch for 5 or 6 years now, and she knows him well, she knows what he wants, and she doesn't need any guidance from me on what to do. She turns to me, though, when she has problems or questions, and see, I have, next to Doris Jones, I have the greatest access to him, because I'm physically right here with him, and I see him a dozen times a day, where most of the staff is across the street, and so therefore they have to rely upon me primarily as a source of information and guidance, because they just don't see him that much. Warren and Bonnie, at most, will see him once a day. Sometimes several days go by when they don't see him. So it's a more distant relationship, but yet they know what they're supposed to do, and they don't have to be consulting with him or anybody else all the time. What I've done to simplify the management is, because of our physical separation with 1, 2, 3, 4 of us over here and the other rest of them across the street, is I've made Bonnie sort of the supervisor of that office. She handles the nitty-gritty of the staff. You know, when people want to go home early or take a day off or what have you, if she doesn't think it's going to pose any problem to us over here, she'll just go ahead and handle it. If she thinks it is going to interrupt our routine, then she confers with me on it. But it's a very relaxed arrangement.
Who are the four people over here? Were you including Mr. Finch?
No, him. He's the fifth. Doris Jones, who is his personal confidential secretary. Then there is myself and two other girls. One is Carol Condon, who is my secretary. Sits in the office, the front office there, and answers the phone both for me and for Mr. Finch. And a girl named Mrs. Barbara Lundgren, L-U-N-G-R-E-N, who has 2 days ago left the staff. And she was a receptionist, handled Mr. Finch's social obligations and so forth, you know, invitations, and also provided some assistance to Mrs. Finch, particularly when she was back here and she was an active cabinet wife. Bobby was sort of provided her whatever assistance she could. And that's the four.
Now, let's see, that. Then there remains, what, 8 across the street?
Mm-hmm. Warren Hendricks, who handles Mr. Finch's travels and logistics. There's Frank Gannon, who was, until 2 months ago was a White House fellow who was detailed to our staff, proved so successful a speechwriter that Mr. Finch kept him on, and he's now a full-fledged member of the Finch staff. And Bonnie Bradbeer, who is both a research assistant, a speechwriter, and a staff administrator, if you will. Those are the three professionals over there. Then there is a gal named Rita Dannenhauer, who handles all of his correspondence. I mean, hundreds of letters a day he gets in. She screens, handles those, which can be handled routinely, bucks the ones that need to go to agencies for attention, and then sends over here only those which need my attention or Doris Jones or Mr. Finch's attention. So she has a very important job. She's sort of a one-man correspondence section. There is, and she, by the way, has, is one of these people, along with Doris, that had been with Mr. Nixon ever since he was a vice president. He's been with campaigns. And in fact, during the 1960s, when he was in New York practicing law and had a small office there, Rita and Doris were the only two girls in the office, along with Mrs. Nixon. And so it's a very close. I think people don't realize how close some of the Finch people have been to the president over all these years. Because at one point, the Finch and the Nixon operations were one.
Yes.
And
when he was administrator.
Plus, then when he went back to California in 1960, he and Bob Finch were, you know, literally together all the time, and their staffs worked together. So there's a lot of these people are not Johnny come latelys in that sense. And so they're, and the president, you know, it's fun. Every so often, he'll run into Rita or Doris crossing the street, and, you know, he'll stop and talk to them, and you know, he remembers them and knows them, and there are moments like that to show you how special these people are. There are three other girls over there who are basically receptionists, stenographers, secretaries. I don't know how detailed you want to go into this.
Generally, we're not interested in people at that level.
And that's it. That's pretty well staffed. That's 3, 4, 5. There's one other girl I should add who I brought over here with me, sort of a semi-professional, who is technically attached to our staff, but who has been working for Chuck Colson on the youth problems during the campaign. So she really is not a, doesn't support Mr. Finch in the way the other people do. Her name is Marusi, Margo Marusi.
As far as the office files go, or the paperwork, are your activities, your inputs, your responsibilities documented in these files, right, to a degree that would satisfy you if...
My personal? No,
right.
I would think not. Unless you could, by reading the letters that I have signed, which are obviously in the files, large percentage of which are letters which were to Mr. Finch, which I have answered for him because I didn't want to get him tied up with something. That would be the only real record that would indicate the scope of the type of activity I was involved in. But that would be misleading, I think, because there's a lot of things that those letters don't cover. No, I, to answer your question, simple terms, I would think not.
In these three categories that you named earlier, I'll ask the question again for each one of these. In terms of the political and substantive correspondence that's gone out of this office, that that had your name on it obviously reflects your input. That that has Mr. Finch's name on it, does that in many instances reflect any input from you at all?
In most cases it reflects little of his input and most of mine.
All right.
I'm talking about substantive problems.
All right.
Let's give an example. A guy writes in from an aerospace company in California who is bothered by a tax regulation. He writes to Bob Finch. He says, you know, he's an old friend, dear Bob, can you tell me or find out such and such? Well, I will be the one that will call IRS, talk to the right person over there, get the answer necessary, write to them and get the written answer, incorporate that in the letter back to the guy, draft the letter, and then send it in and Finch signs it. And, he frequently reads through carefully and maybe makes some suggested changes, but by and large, we've reached a compatibility where I know what he wants to say and I'm able to do it for him.
You mentioned another category, presidential projects. I assume that this would involve some of these cabinet committees, National Center for Voluntary Action, these. Information in the files, in Mr. Finch's files relating to these, will we find anything in there that would indicate?
Sure, my involvement, no, no. You're going to find very little in any of these categories of my own personal involvement, because I do everything in his name. And I can say, you know, without trying to make it appear as a negative reflection on him, because it's not, but I would guess, since I've been here, 80% of the substantive correspondence and memos, whether it's presidential, political, or otherwise, is my work. But let me qualify that. It's my work in the sense that it's been my project. It's got his clear input and guidance and policy and thinking. It's not, I wouldn't take credit for it, but I'm just simply saying that that's been the thrust of my responsibility.
Well, your answer doesn't surprise me, and it's not unusual. I think this reflects the role of a person who has the kind of assignment you do. It's not at all unusual.
It's not a visible role at all.
No, it isn't.
It's very easy to be tempted to try to make it such, you know, but when you're working for a man you think so highly of, it's very easy not to, and all of us have felt that way on the staff. I don't know how other staffs are, but it's a pretty heady atmosphere around here, you know, when you're in the White House, and it's tempting to raise your own flag now and then, but it hasn't been a problem.
Well, I've gotten pretty much the same feeling that was expressed by both Bonnie and Warren when we talked with them. They too mentioned this compatibility that the staff has that evidently is somewhat worrying. It's unusual, I think.
Well, it's unusual for a couple of reasons, and this is something which a lot of people don't understand, I don't think. One is that he has a unique position in the White House. He is not in most senses under the strict organizational structure and discipline that the other staffs are. He has his own sort of little niche. He's got his own access to the president. He has his own sort of agenda, and frankly, is not particularly intrigued by the rigidity of the staff. And so he sort of set his own style. Secondly, he, in his own personal style himself, is one of tremendous flexibility and informality, and he encourages that. And so as a result, we had unusually organized and operating staff, but staffs had fun. I mean, we really have a lot of fun around here, and it's people have commented on that, because a lot of people carry a very heavy burden of, in other words, we don't make a big thing out of deadlines and timetables and red tags and so forth. You know, we get things done when they're supposed to be done, but we try to keep that feeling of pressure off of people. And my own experience has been that they're far more productive that way than they are when they're getting a telephone call every 2 minutes saying, where's the memo? And this is no reflection on people who operate that way, because when you're dealing with a large staff, you have to have those rules. But again, we're in a sense a special exception, I think. This explains a lot of our idiosyncrasies.
Mr. Finch's responsibility, as I understand it, is for just about anything that comes within the realm of domestic affairs.
And international affairs.
And international.
I mean, that's a minor role, but he made three international visits, missions for the president. He made an extensive one in Latin America, presidential mission. He made one to Europe with Don Rumsfeld. And then he's gone to some state funerals for the president, which you really can't put in that category. But you're right. I would even refine it more than what you said. His real bag is politics, and that's he's the pro around here, and that's of course what the president leaned on him the hardest for. But he had sort of carte blanche to get in any area he wanted to. And a good example of that is last spring, it was, I guess, when the primaries were underway, the Democratic primaries, a lot of his thinking about the electoral process crystallized, and he made a major speech on the subject and proposed some electoral reforms, which caught fire nationally and got a lot of press out of it. And so he began working on that whole concept, and now he's been asked by the president to put together a study on this whole question as to what the president should propose in the way of legislation on changing the whole electoral process. Well, nobody came up to him and said, this is something we want you to do. He sort of was able to carve that out himself because he saw a need for it. And likewise, he's just, whenever he's seen something that's bothered him or concerned him or felt needed attention, he's been very willing to jump in and make his views known. And one of the functions that we have performed is just to bring some things to his attention.
In this line, how much contact does he have and did you have with people on the domestic council? I would assume from what you've told me, from what little I can figure out, that there is almost total overlap.
Not really, because Finch never gets down into the nitty-gritty. I mean, he normally stops at the high policy level of involvement.
The ideal.
Yeah. So there's really never any overlap. Now, there are some occasions, but to answer your question, yes, there was. It's not a formal relationship, but we. This is where I come in, but I've dealt with many, I would say most of the domestic council directors, assistant directors. I mean, you know, if there's a problem in health, I'm on the phone to Jim Cavanaugh. If there's a problem with veterans, I'm on the phone to somebody else. And more often than that, I'll get a call from somebody who will say, John Evans, for example, will say, you know, I've got a volunteer program question or problem. What is Finch's guidance? And they'll call me for the problem. I'll go in and talk to him and say, have him do A, B, or C. So more often than not, they come to us for sort of his viewpoint on something rather than backwards. This is particularly true when it relates to California. I don't think there's a single thing done around here that relates to California that he hasn't cut in on at some point. Whether it's a grant of money for a project or disaster relief or what have you, he's right in there.
With the files that have been generated throughout his staff reflect all of these things? The answer doesn't surprise me, but
so much of it's oral. You see, it's an IO call to me on something, and I make a note and go and talk to him, call the guy back. This doesn't make your life any easier, but we have a firm policy and belief that the less paperwork, the better, because there's just so much of it around here. We try to do everything we can and by phone rather than by writing.
With a small staff, this is easy to do.
Yeah. Particularly sensitive stuff. I mean, there's no sense in putting something down in writing. You can handle it by phone.
Some of these other presidential projects that you mentioned, did you spend any great amount of time on any one of them as opposed to all of the others, or was it pretty well
distributed? No. Let me just break them down. I've been involved primarily in three. There are others. The most time-consuming, on a consistent basis, has been the Cabinet Committee on the Spanish issue, because that is an ongoing problem area. I mean, the whole question of the Spanish speaking, and it's literally an agency that requires monitoring and policy guidance and so forth. So that was always, still is, the most active of all these areas of concern.
Is this something that has grown out of his California?
Well, it happened before I got here, but Finch has always had an unusually good rapport with minorities, blacks, browns, young people, and so forth. This was true when he was in HEW, and it was true before then. And so when the whole Spanish-speaking question sort of emerged, they looked to him for, the president turned right to him because he was a logical one. And he speaks Spanish and he understands the Chicano because he grew up with him out there. And he's very well liked by them, which makes a big difference. I mean, he can talk to them and they listen and, you know, they're very friendly to him. But, you know, just like you know, you talk to any of these guys in the domestic council that monitor the various agencies, it was the same kind of a job. You've got an agency with a director and a budget, and they've had more than their fair share of problems. Finch has always seemed to have the cans of worms to worry about. Cabinet committee was, for a variety of reasons, had a lot of problems, budgetary, personnel. They had no real orientation, policy direction. And so ever since I've come in anyway, I've been working with the director to, or chairman, to sort of get his house in order. The thing is running pretty smoothly now, and so that's something we're very proud of, that we've sort of got that thing off the ground and running. So that's been the most important and time-consuming of his presidential, ongoing presidential areas of responsibility. Now, the day after I came aboard, the National Center for Voluntary Action thing sort of blew up. That had been an activity that the president had cranked up when he first took office, and it limped along unsuccessfully for several years with two or three different heads, and finally the thing had just reached the point where they were broke, they had no morale, and it was just ready to collapse. And Finch, at some point about that time, was asked to sort of move in and, you know, play the role of doctor. So for a period of about 3 months, I spent a large portion of my time on that problem. We've got a new president, we got them some federal dollars, we got a meeting with the president, with their officers, and it was just a lot of work to be done on that.
Who were the people that you were working with?
First it was a guy named Ted Etherington, who was the president. Henry Ford was the chairman of the board. Henry Ford resigned about this time. This is sort of what precipitated the whole thing. And Etherington moved up to his position as chairman, and a fellow named Doug Kinsey, who was a commissioner at GSA, was appointed to be the president. And so I've been working mostly with Kinsey over this period of time. Kinsey is a close friend of Bob Haldeman's, went to school with him, is politically on the same frequency as the president, so it was a very easy relationship. He's a crack administrator, and so that whole operation now is on track. There, if you watch pro football on Sundays, you see their ads. I mean, the whole thing now is off and flying. Unfortunately, it's 4 years too late. But so once you know, we've sort of played the game of get something going, and then it takes care of itself. Sort of, that's sort of like view our role. We had the third area we had, I spent a lot of time on, was the White House Youth Conference activities, which involved a presidential meeting. It involved the research, writing, and printing of a very large report, which this office coordinated, which was a blow-by-blow analysis of each of the conference recommendations. The president has a letter in the front, so. This was sort of a commitment he made, and which we had to follow up on. And that activity just now is winding up.
Who were the people you were working with in that regard?
Well, on this project, we had a person in each agency and department who took their respective categories, whether it was crime or health or what have you. And then in our office, this girl, Margot Marussi, was sort of the day-to-day project worker. And we had a consulting firm that did the technical layout and so forth. But we made the policy decisions over here. Mr. Finch gave us the guidance and was involved in sort of the final wrap-up of the thing. This is a remarkable document. I mean, it's the first time in the history of White House conferences that a president has ever taken such a careful study of that. Conference's recommendations and printed it and distributed it. We had a press conference on it and got some publicity out of it. But this was no small task. And then we just today have a copy of it, releasing a final report, which sort of summarizes the whole activity, what the projects were. This was just one of about five projects.
you were then more or less coordinating all of it?
Yeah, because you see, I was the director of the conference, and so when I came over here, I was the only one who really had the perspective of the whole thing. I did very little of the menial labor, I think, that was sort of.
Well, then you've been involved with the White House Conference on Youth for the entire time you've been here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. The post-conference period. You see, what happened was the conference had, it was over in April of 71, and the Congress appropriated $150,000 for a year after program. So that whole program had to be monitored and administered and so forth. So that responsibility, the ultimate responsibility was in Mr. Finch's lap. And so that was my chore, one of my chores is to keep on top of that.
Paperwork on that, is that non-existent also?
Yeah, it's existent. It's in two areas. There's the conference itself, which compiled its own paperwork files, and that's going to the archives. This project, I've had documented in the papers put together for the president's files, because I think this is something which far more reflects on him. The conference was his too, but as conferences go, it was not that different. It's required by law to have every 10 years, as these other conferences, the nutrition and the so forth. But this particular aspect of it was unique and one that the president deserves a great deal of credit for, and then fully documenting the process. Incidentally, just as an aside, this idea was incorporated by the Domestic Council for the Agent Conference, and they are doing the same kind of thing now, so that's impressive.
Do you have any extra copies of that around, Ray?
Sure.
I'm sure we've got one in our office.
Yeah, this one.
But I'd sure hate to get down there and find out we don't.
Yeah, you can have that.
Good.
Now, let me just tell you one more thing about that.
All right.
It's important. 3 days after the youth conference was over, in April 22nd of 1971, the president had a cabinet meeting at which Elliot Richardson, who had been at the conference, briefed the cabinet and the president on its results. And at that particular cabinet meeting, the president asked each cabinet officer to study and respond and analyze each recommendation that pertained to his particular area of responsibility. That was the genesis of this large document. On that signal, then President's office sent the responsibility over to us. I was then on the conference staff, and then we picked up the ball and began the job of this project. It took us about 6-7 months, maybe a little longer. And the president's letter there explains, I think, or Finch's letter explains what happened.
That letter right here.
It's a forward, really, that Finch really explains the process.
Are the agencies in a position now to less implement?
Well, no. What this really is a status report. I mean, it's, you know, you can't point to any one recommendation and say, ha-ha, that recommendation resulted in these things happening. There are lots of things that happened because of the conference, but you know, there's things in here like stop the war and, you know.
Runs the gamut.
Yeah, I mean, it's every social problem you can imagine, 550 recommendations. But where the kids got very specific and sensible, yes, they were. For example, one group advised young people be placed on the board of the Fine Arts Commission Commission on the National Council on the Arts, Nancy Hanks' group. And lo and behold, she puts a couple of kids on it. Same way at the Bicentennial Commission, they responded to it. So there was some results, not the cosmic results. Some of these kids changed their priorities at the government, put half the budget to, you know, poverty, that kind of stuff. As I said, I warned you, that's a whole different subject which I could spend a day on.
Well, I'd be glad to sit down with you if you ever wish to comment on it. Again, that's one of the things we hope to do with this little interview project, is get get comments from people where we're not going to find anything in the files.
I tell you what I think I would recommend you do at some point. I wouldn't make it a full-blown project, but this youth conference was both a very controversial and also a very successful event because it was dealing with a constituency, which at the time was a very explosive one. You know, campuses were blowing up and kids were marching on the Ellipse and so forth. And for the Nixon administration to have the courage to pull something off like that in itself is something worth noting. But it was done, and it was done in a way to try to include all the concerns and viewpoints of these different kinds of kids, you know, who were expressing themselves so vociferously. So what I'm suggesting is at some point somebody may want to just very briefly trace that project, not on an in-depth basis because it gets very sociological, but the guy who was in charge of it is a fellow named Stephen Hess.
I talked with Steve.
Did you?
But only about his White House activities. Oh. And I stopped short and he said, now listen, some other time we're going to have to get back together on this.
Yeah, I would do that. He's the guy, see, he was the top person. He was the national chairman of both the children's and the youth conferences. And he had the fellow in charge of his children's conference and me in charge of the youth. But we were more executive director types. We managed and administered the project. But he was the guy that takes the credit for the...
No, I was very impressed with Steve. I had a very nice chat with him, and he was very outgoing, very candid.
He's a very bright and knowledgeable guy. He's been around here for since he was 21 years old with the president.
He's up at Brookings now,
yeah,
I understand.
Yeah. So, you know, if you want to do something on that conference, which I would recommend simply because it was a unique one. It was done in a very unique way. And I'd start with him because he could pretty well... because it's an accomplishment which, as time passes and people get a little bit more objective perspective on that tumultuous period of the 70s, it's going to look back and say, hey, that was a pretty interesting experiment President Nixon.
Who was your counterpart for the conference on children?
A guy named Bill Lieber, L-I-E-B-E-R, who used to work for Ron Walker at the Advance Office and was active in the 68 campaign. He's now a dentist out on the West Coast. And that was a whole different type of activity, which is another story in itself, but far more to a traditional conference where lots of adults came to Washington and sat around the Sheraton Hotel. And, we took 1,000 kids out in the boonies in Colorado and
terrible
games
snowstorm.
In the snow. Yeah, yeah.
I remember that the newspaper articles about that. Oh boy. As if it wasn't bad enough to have all those kids out there.
That's right. Of course, the snow kept them from screwing around.
I suppose that's true.
Kept the drugs away and everything else.
What other people on the White House staff did you work with, Ray, just regularly, outside of the Robert Finch office and perhaps outside of the domestic counsel? Were there any others?
I worked very closely with Bill Marumoto on Spanish-speaking problems because they had project officers for various areas of interest, particularly campaign-oriented. And Mo had the Spanish-speaking. He was the recruiter for that. Presidential appointees, and plus he's very knowledgeable about that constituency. So I work very closely with Bill Marumoto. Of course, we all work closely with Bruce Curley and his people downstairs, just for administrative purposes. Some relationship with Don Rumsfeld, because he is the other counselor, and I had less dealings with him than Finch, obviously. It's hard for me to make a distinction between sort of professional relationships. I have so many friends, you see, on the staff. Always.
How about congressional relations? Anybody over there recently?
Nobody. The only person that I really had a close working relationship with, simply because of a project, was Javits, Senator Javits, and his top guy, a guy named.
His AA?
Yeah, he's a known as well as my own name. I can't think of him right now. Anyway, what's my friend's name on Senator Javits' staff? Yeah, Alan Blanchard. Thank you. Yeah, Alan Blanchard. Because Javits' concern for the Puerto Ricans and some problems that committee was having up in New York, and because of our cabinet committee involvement, we worked very closely with his office on that. And we were always dealing with various congressional offices, because Finch knows all the senators up there, and so on. But nobody consistently like I did Blanchard.
Anybody on Colson's staff on a regular basis?
Oh, Marimoto was one. Henry Cashin now and then. All of his guys now and then.
I would think so, given your...
Yeah, I mean, if a problem cropped up on veterans, I'd talk to Bill Rattigan. If it was a problem on labor, it would be George Bell. I mean, it just depends upon what the problem may be. We work with Glenn Garment's staff quite a bit, because he had Indians and Spanish-speaking have certain overlapping areas. Herb Klein's shop, we were working with all the time. I think primarily because Klein and Finch are personally such good friends, and both into the California scene. Worked a lot with Fred Malik and his people. And again, this is because Fred is a former Finch staff person and has an interest in what he's doing, and provided us some guidance, particularly on the NCBA reorganization project. We worked very closely with Fred on that. Anytime you had a personnel problem, we deal with that. I don't think there's anybody who we haven't dealt with. Kissinger staff, yes, particularly on these foreign trips. Most cases, however, Finch would deal with the Colsons, the Kleins, and the Garments, and the Kissingers, while I would deal with the Cashins and the Ken Clausens and the Al Haigs in the world, that type of thing. So I personally never dealt very closely with any of the senior staff.
You mentioned cable TV. Did that bring you into much contact with Commerce, ICC, or perhaps the Office of Science and Technology?
No, only with OTP, Office of Telecommunications Policy. They were the ones who...
That's right. That's Whitehead, isn't it?
Yeah. Let me qualify that. Frank Gannon really was supposed to be the one on the staff that had that project, because his background is television. But because he traveled so much, was in town at the wrong times, or was out of town at the wrong times, I sat in on a couple of those cable television meetings. So I can't really say I got very involved in that. But.
Consumer Affairs, Virginia Nauer?
No, other than just talking to her every so often. You know, nothing. And I think I'm going to get my White House list here. What else am I doing? Well, we had some dealings with John Dean's office, John Dean himself. But you see, you name a project,
yeah,
a problem, and as I said, Finch always was the recipient, or I shouldn't say always, in many cases, was given very sticky political problems, which were very sensitive. And one may deal with a legal problem on one day, and the next time I may deal with a communications problem. And so whichever the problem was, that's the people you dealt with. So we really, there wasn't a staff person in this White House that we didn't deal with that I can think of, except perhaps First Lady's staff. And even there, no, we even dealt with her staff. Because of her Peruvian,
her trip down there,
and her, she was the honorary chairman of the Pakistani relief effort.
Did you travel with Mr. Finch on all of this?
No, I traveled with him, half a dozen occasions, and I spent two or three weeks with him during the campaign, just to beef him up during the final days of the campaign. But normally, I stayed home and covered his bases here at Warren while he was away.
While you're going through that, I'll throw out another question. You can try and juggle both of them. As far as newspaper or magazine coverage of Mr. Finch and his activities, were there any that also perhaps mentioned your activities and responsibilities?
I
ask that question, Ray, in the hope that someone will say, oh yes, such and such a periodical or a journal did an article on us. You know, it's one that probably might be very, very valuable and full of a lot of insight, and we would have missed it.
Yeah. No, so, I can say with some certainty that I don't know of any. I'm trying to think. The reason I'm thinking is I'm trying to separate youth conferences. When I was a director of youth conference, I had a tremendous amount of publicity. Newspaper articles and in-depth, you know,
with the
feature
files
stories
that you collected on that contained most of those.
Yeah, there was a whole clipping service, but that was there was no Finch correlation there at all.
Again, this reflects the low key, low visibility operation.
Yeah, I would discourage anything like that. There's no point in it. He's the guy that we're trying to get the visibility for, if anybody.
Do you have any idea where you might be reached in 5 or 10 years if we want to come back to you? We use this date just off the top of our head. Are you going to maintain any memberships in any professional?
You can always reach me through Finch, because I'll probably be with him at some point later on, depending on what his...
Are you from California originally?
Uh-huh. But I'm entertaining the option of at some point joining up with him either in his campaign, if he decides to run in 74, or after he's elected, if and after he's elected, be with him. You know, that's a very speculative question to ask. All I can say is that I have had and will always have Potomac fever, and so I can always be found in this... in this neck of the woods. I want a house here, and whether I live here or not, I'll probably keep it. So
any mail that was addressed to you here would eventually find you somewhere.
Yeah.
Do you have any?
As long as there's a Republican administration, I can always be reached to the White House. I'm quite certain. Because this is my interest in my profession.
What's your background?
Well, I'm a two-thirds of a lawyer. I got a master's in foreign affairs after college, went in the Navy for 5 years, went back to law school, and was completing my second year when I was appointed a youth conference job. So I'm now trying to wind up my law degree on a...
Where are you taking it?
The University of Virginia. But it's a matter of just getting some more hours when I can.
Boy, that's... You've got a tough enough schedule without throwing something out.
Well, you know, they're loosening up the academic requirements now, where they give credit for all kinds of things, you know, independent research, and they're even going to they may give me some credit for just being here.
I think they should.
So, you know, if I wait long enough, the degree will come in the mail someday. That's my hope.
In talking to some of the other people on Mr. Finch's staff, I got the impression that the majority of his contacts were with HEW simply because his interests seemed to be more often than not the responsibility of that agency. Do you have any light to shed on that?
You have to expand on what you mean by contacts.
The assignments that the president gave Mr. Finch, or just his interests, generally were in areas that HEW oversaw, so there would be a lot of communications between Finch and HEW.
Yeah, I'd say yes and no. Let's be specific. He had the Scranton Commission responsibility when he was here. That's education in a sense, so that's HEW related. He has a very strong personal interest in health, and so he's always been involved in hospital medical programs and policies and so forth. But I think that I would state it in a little bit different terms, that he's had a close continuing relationship with HEW because, A, he was the former secretary, and of course he knows that agency the best. And B, most of the people over there, the key people, are still his appointees, which means many of them are his close friends. And sometimes his interest over there is generated by them rather than him, you see, you follow me? So if you had to pick any one agency that got, you know, disproportionate share of his attention, obviously it's HEW. But that's as much because of his sort of his social interests as it is anything else. But my own experience, we've had our fingers in every agency that I can tell. In terms of, yeah, you're right. I think that's a fair thing to say. But I don't think he's gotten a great, has had a large number of assignments that are related to that agency. It's just his own, it's his own personal sort of interest.
That wraps up all of the specific questions I had to ask you without getting you off onto the you know, I'd be total death sitter and listen to you. I just don't want to burn you out, and perhaps 5 years from now when we call you up again to have you say, oh my God, that's the guy that promised a half hour and spent the whole afternoon with me. Get rid of him. So
I'm just trying to think, is there anything else that you should know about this
in terms
job?
Of the administration, the organization of the office, the staff, the papers, the daily schedules.
One other aspect of this job, which I didn't mention, which is not terribly in the scale of things important, but nevertheless it was consumed with quite a bit of time, is that I would see a lot of people for him, personal, you know, visitors. There are a lot of people who want to see him who can't because of his time schedule. And once he felt should be seen in person, he would, if he couldn't do it, he'd have me meet him. So I spent a lot of time sitting around here with like people like yourself, just listening to problems, or, you know, a lot of times people come in with ideas they want to sort of stick into the White House hopper.
In a case like that, would you make a note of it, perhaps, to send a memo to Mr. Finch or domestic counsel or Leonard Garman? Or
well, let's see. Yeah, I'll forget. For example, there was one guy who came in here who was an architect from Los Angeles who desperately wanted to see Mr. Finch. He came in. I saw him. He had an idea for the president, which he could sort of show an increased concern for the inner cities and their development and problems and so forth. And he had plans and a proposal and all this kind of stuff. Well, he was a very capable guy and he was very impressive, and I sensed that what he was talking about was not just a crackpot. So I, in a case like that, this is not our area of responsibility, nor did I want to get Finch involved in it. This is one of the roles I played, was I'd have to sort of screen out who he saw and what kinds of things he gave his attention to. And I made a judgment in this case, as I did in a number of cases, and this was not something that I wanted to burden him about. So what I did in that case was I collected all the materials this guy brought. I went in and briefed Finch about it, just in a very succinct way. This is what the guy talks about. I don't want to bore you with the details, but it's something that sounds good, that's worth looking at, and I recommend that we send it over to so-and-so. He would normally, in fact, every case would say fine, or he would perhaps suggest somebody else. And then I'd shoot a memo over to Ed Harper or someone in the domestic council who would have some responsibility for this, saying, you know, take a look at the attached and tell me what you think. And then they would study it and send back a report. And then I would get back to the guy and say, look, your ideas spark some interest. I suggest you deal directly with Mr. So-and-so and pull out of it. Or just write back and say, I'm sorry, we've reviewed your idea and appreciate your effort, but we, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, then there will be something in file.
So there'll be something, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Your activities.
Yeah.
Your input.
Yeah. Yeah, our files will give a pretty good picture of it. I'm going to personally go through them and just see what they were.
Did you maintain any sort of a Chrome file or anything, right?
I did personally. My girl does. She's kept the Cron file on my memos.
Would that be going to the central files or along with the rest of the office?
Good. I think so. Good. No.
That could shed an awful lot of light. In fact, what we would probably do prior to another interview with you, 5 or 10 years from now, is read through those Cron files to get a better feel for what you did, some of your ideas and thoughts and activities, and then you can sit down and ask some hopefully meaningful questions of you, substantive questions. So, do you have a biographical sketch that we could throw in this file?
Sure. Yeah, my girl has one.
Now, hopefully what I'll try and do is go back and write a resume of this and send it back to you, let you review it, make any comments or corrections you would, send it back to us.
So this must be interesting, go around and sort of...
It is, it is. I'm always a little bit hesitant. I know you guys are busy as hell, and so I...
Well, it's the kind of thing like you just, it's a pain to take photographs too of your family, but it's good to have them, you know, when your kids are older.
That's right.
Are you with the White House right here?
Well, I'm part of the Office of Presidential Papers and Archives. It's over there. We're all National Archives employees detailed over to the White House staff. So, you know, we wear two hats. We're White House staff. Yeah. We're also...
Is this permanent or just for this period?
No, just for the Nixon administration. And then we'll go with the library. So.
Oh, I see.
So when I say 5 or 10 years from now when we be back, in fact, I do mean that either I'll be back in contact with you or Jack Nesbitt or somebody else on our staff. And, of course, ideally, when we get out to California, we tell you death that people stop by the library.
Yeah, well, Finch is involved in some capacity.
Yes, he's on the Nixon Foundation, and we're all very pleased about that.
So he'll be seeing a lot of him.
No, we have high hopes that the library will be at least in the process of being constructed by the time Mr. Nixon leaves office. Mm. And there's always an outside chance that it could be completed.
Finch,
We don't know, but we assume that the site has been selected and perhaps it's just waiting until after the selection and a few other things to settle down before he announces it. Mm. We understand Whittier is one of the sites, San Clemente is another one, and someplace around Newport Beach.
Yeah, that's one different.
And, never having been to California, of course, these are only names to me.
Yeah. Oh, you got a real treat ahead for you. You won't want to come back.
My wife, of course, is scared to death because she